Got a bad bitch on me.
What?
Got a bad bitch on me. She DTF.
She tell me she
DTF.
I heard she
DTF.
What?
And you ain't hanging with the team if you ain't down to fuck.
Okay. Well, Lou, I'm on my bag. Got that code in a spike.
Welcome to DTF, the Daryl Timmery Fun Hour. It is the greatest sex education, comedy, sometimes game show, currently podcast in the known universe. Hello. I'm your resident sexuality educator, Dr. Timmery.
And I'm your resident sexuality Robin, Daryl Charles. Yeah.
Yeah, is that going to be the thing now? Is I'm Batman?
I think so. Okay. I think so. Maybe I should go back. Should I be Batgirl, I think? Yeah.
I don't know. I just, you know how I feel about Batman. I'm like, you could have used that money so much better.
Oh, totally.
Really wanted to punch people.
Yeah. I was in a show, like this like improv game show, and I was supposed to be giving the talk. Like they were like, you're Batman, give Robin the talk. And so I was like, yeah, man, your parents are dead, but I still love you. And the way we express our love is by beating up the homeless. And I, you know, fun conversation. And when I was done, they were like, Daryl, we meant the birds and the bees. I was like, oh.
Well,
oh.
I mean, yeah.
Like,
how would you tell him? Like,
Batman doesn't explain that kind of stuff. He doesn't care. He just beats people up.
Yeah, that's true.
Everyone are his playthings. Why would he care about? He doesn't care about consent. Anyway.
Yeah. All right. Well,
he's a fake man, and that's a fake boy. So there's that.
In non-fictional characters,
yeah.
So we have a guest with us today. Welcome to the show, and it is his first time too, so extra welcome, Chad Eric Smith. He is an actor, a filmmaker, a musician. We'll talk more about that, but welcome to the show, Chad Eric Smith.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. This is awesome.
I'm so excited you're here. Like we met doing a first person arts thing and vibed over being, I mean, this is my recollection of the evening, pervy nerds. So
yes,
pervy art nerds.
Yes. No, it was a good time. I never got to be a judge at an event and be able to drink an old fashioned at the same time. So I appreciated that even more.
Yeah. So yeah, tell the nice folks at home, like, what are the kind of things that you do? Like I you know, gave those labels, but like, what are you about?
Yeah. So, you know, I've been acting for nearly 20 years at this point. Haven't been doing as much gigs lately since the pandemic. I produce some content as well. But yeah, I'm a character actor. I've been in, several projects like, the horror film, The Suffering, which is on Amazon Prime, sci-fi, time travel short film that I co-produced and star in called Fatherless, which is on Amazon Prime. A few other projects, a project called Counselors, 8-episode, 2-character drama on Amazon Prime. So I just love, you know, storytelling. I love kind of stepping into the shoes of a character or bringing from the inside out certain aspects of myself. Right now, a lot of my time is consumed with my day job. I am the senior director of communications and brand management at Mural Arts Philadelphia. So that takes a lot of time because, you know, that's the like largest public art program in the country, but I've always enjoyed doing work that had some social impact attached to it, even if there's a creative and art aspect to it.
Brilliant. Well, then you're going to have a great time on here talking about sex and railing against capitalism.
Yeah. Let's do it. Let's do it.
That's kind of our whole thing. So,
yeah, you think we're talking about sex, and then it's like, and this is why we need to seize the means of production. It's yeah, who knows?
Yeah,
it's almost as if there's one main point from which all ills stem from. And by that, I mean the presidency of Ronald Reagan.
Yeah, no, I was so notably, I am a heavy Tumblr user, and there was a poll the other day that was like, who was worse, Reagan or Trump? And it was not even close. It was not even close. Everyone's like, it's Reagan, because if you didn't have a Reagan, you wouldn't have a Trump. Like,
right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Reagan walked so that Trump could fly.
So true. Yeah. And in the midst of his flight, society went away. I can't overstate like the next person I hear say, well, you know, it's not going to change nothing in my life, like something about an election, I might catch a charge because I'm going to be like, we had to stay inside. What did you do in September of 2020? Do you remember? You don't, because it matters.
Yeah. A lot can happen in anyone's lifetime. So that's not a, you know, good excuse for anything. I mean, all you got to do is read any history book, and over the span of 50 to 70 years, a lot of shit can happen.
Yep. Yep. But I mean, a concrete example, you don't remember 2021.
Bits and pieces.
Right.
Like a night of drinking.
Right.
An entire year. Man, anyway.
Anyway, yeah. All right. Let's get to the fucking. Sex and gender. Let's talk about the fucking. All right. Welcome to the sex podcast. On that note, we will head to our first regular segment, which is the fucking news.
That's news about fucking.
It is.
In case you've never been here.
Today is a real fun episode where we're probably going to get big mad. The first story has to do with AI. We've been talking about AI increasingly on this on the show in terms of its impact on like misinformation and stuff like that, in the ways that, you know, racist and sexist design end up becoming like part of the structure of these technologies. And today we are going to be talking about how AI has been used to detect people's sexual orientation. And there have been a few different studies that have looked at this. In June, a group of Swiss researchers published their research. Basically, they developed an AI gaydar that was accurate on differentiating between homosexual and heterosexual men with an accuracy rate of 83%, which is much higher than like human guessing. And they think that this opens up a lot of avenues for potential research and stuff like that. And they're not the first ones to do this sort of thing. There were researchers at Stanford who did a facial recognition system that used like 35,000 facial images that they pulled from dating apps. And just based entirely on these single facial images, were able to guess whether a guy was gay or straight in 81% of cases and 74% of women, which is comparatively to like 60 to 50% for just like humans guessing it. So that, to me, is terrifying. This technology is horrific to me. I think research for research sake is interesting, but I exist in America in 2023, so I find this horrific. What do y'all think?
I mean, it certainly feels scary. I mean, like, I feel like all of the sci-fi movies of my childhood and before I was even born are coming to fruition. I mean, obviously, this type of technology could be misused. Or even to persecute folks, you know, especially in countries where like homosexuality, for example, is illegal. Imagine like using that type of technology to persecute citizens.
Yeah.
At the same time, like AI is in a lot of ways reflective of humankind, right? And humankind can be fucked up too. Yeah. So some ways like the fucked upness is baked into the algorithms. Crazy.
Yeah. I think that this is phrenology. Phrenology is like the idea of
a pseudoscience, right?
It's a pseudoscience that was very racist, that was used to be like, you're going to be a criminal if you have a certain type of head, right? Junk science. But it's not quite that. They say it in this article. I can't find it now. It's like physiology. It's something that's similar to phrenology. When I find it tomorrow, I'll yell it out loud. Physiognomy. Physiognomy. And it's BS, right? Like the idea that, and like Chad said, like humanity is flawed and we build these systems without looking at those flaws. And so we have these flawed systems. So I can only imagine, and again, you know, research or whatever, but like I bet you if you just put a picture of a person wearing a pink tie, it's going to say that that person's gay. Like, it's going to use very superficial things, in my opinion, having only read this article, right?
And I wonder how, like, the AI will adjust with the times, too, right? Because a pink tie in 2023, I don't think has the same type of connotations that potentially Pink Floyd in like 1993 might have had, right?
Right.
Like, you know, people's styles have changed, people's perspectives have changed, people's ideas on gender has changed. So does artificial intelligence change along with it, or is it just based on like the biases of the programmer?
Right.
And I'm also curious what you all think about just the term Gaydar, because, you know, that term itself, like in 2023, is that viewed negatively? Because I know for a while people used to say it kind of like as if it was a badge of honor that they had the ability to be able to spot that. You know?
Right. Yeah. I mean, we call it clocking now. It's not Gaydar anymore. It's clocking. Right. Yeah. And that's just, yeah, I, you know, but clocking has a connotation more of like, I see you, like, I see. No. Not really. Well,
it depends, right? Like, so the origin of clocking, like, my understanding is that it wasn't originally for sexual orientation. It had more to do with saying that you, that a trans person wasn't passing. And so I think that obviously all of these phrases keep evolving to mean different things. But like, there's a couple things on that. Like when you say that it could have positive connotations for someone who's queer, it is like, because for, especially folks that live in a place where it's really repressed, like you want to be able to find your people. You want to be able to signal it. Like that's how hanky code develops. Like there are lots of little tiny signals that, you know, people can share of whatever culture has to be hidden. So there is a positive thing, but like with this AI, like these researchers have yet to identify what would be the benefit for LGBT people to for this to exist. Like they have yet to say like what are the applications of this other than to identify a marginalized population that is sometimes hidden? Like what else would this be for?
Right. And like what this I will never believe that your nose shape can tell me what kind of genitals you like in your mouth. Like that's ridiculous. Like you know what I mean? Like what does a deviated septum mean? Like, you know, what if you get a nose job? Are you all of a sudden gay? Like, you know, these things are, you know, they don't have anything to do with each other. And I don't care what kind of robot you make that says so.
Well, it's interesting because sometimes I'll be talking with like queer folks and someone will say like basically these things are like, oh, she got the gay face.
Oh, right. Sure.
We all knowing that we are like queer identified folks are like, aha, yes, or it's fine. Yeah. But what we don't want is in a country where there's just like this rapid uptick of anti-LGBT legislation. We're like, they don't need this technology. They don't need to know.
And I think that goes to the good point about like who is saying it, you know, like sometimes that's a really interesting topic in itself, because I think of any type of marginalized group, there are kind of these nuances that if you're of the community, you understand it better than I'd imagine that people outside the community.
Right.
You mentioned artificial intelligence. I mean, that's way outside. That's not even real, you know.
That's not human, right.
Not even human, you know. So one person may think, for example, Gaydar or any other term you could think of that might be considered like slang as being like playful, whereas someone else might think it's offensive or stereotypical, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I mean, and it definitely goes back to what are you using this information for? Is this like the way to get into a secret club? Is this the way to determine who you hire? You know, or is it just a fun TikTok app that's actually figuring out a way to monetize your response?
Yeah. So I'm thinking of examples of this previously and the ways in which these things have been used in ways that are a little bit more neutral. Like there was an article, I think it might've been like The Guardian or something. It was an op-ed and a woman talking about how Netflix figured out she was queer before she did based on her watching, because their algorithm is so, you know, they put a lot of energy into this algorithm. And then a lot of folks talking about how TikTok also helped them figure out their neurodiversity or their queerness or whatever it is based on, you know, the stuff that they were consuming and the people that they're friends with and stuff like that. So like, if it helps you find things that are relevant to you, cool.
Yeah. But finding something relevant to you doesn't mean that it just means that it interests you. Yeah, like, sure. Like, you know, I think it's inherent on everybody to take a look in the mirror and decide if you're gay. or a man or a woman, or, you know, like it you know, do the self-discovery of yourself. And in that self-discovery, you should be, I say this on stage when I'm making jokes, but it's like, you should be watching gay porn with your cousins, right? Like, you should be exploring these things, not to say that it's going to make you one way, because we know that, you know, just being exposed to a thing does not radically change the course of your life. Mm-hmm. But like, you can't say for a fact that I don't feel like I'm a woman inside if you've never asked yourself the question, right? Mm-hmm. The fact that like somebody brings it up and you get very angry about it would tell somebody else, I think you're hiding something, right? So I encourage you to do that. So like, that exploration does not mean that you identify with the thing.
Oh yeah, yeah. Interest versus identity is very, very different.
Right.
But you know, algorithms, I'm thinking about it like from the perspective of someone who does marketing and communications for a living on top mm-hmm. of all of my artistry. Mm-hmm. Like, I could see this as being an evolution of what's already happening with ads, right? Like targeted mm-hmm. ads where you've noticed like, man, I was just thinking about such and such, or I was just kind of perusing the internet. Next thing you know, you're seeing an ad campaign for something specific to what you were thinking about.
Right.
So I'd imagine if they're targeting to specific identities, there might be certain things as part of that person's world that you could target specifically for monetary use. And that takes us back to like it being a capitalist you know, society too, you know, we live in, you know, everything is about the bottom line and making money. Yeah.
It's true.
This is also making me think about like when maybe like 20 years ago, I think there was a really big move for the idea that we have to prove that homosexuality is not a choice, right? That your sexual mm-hmm. orientation is an innate thing. And like, you know, Lady Gaga has a song about it and you're just born that way. And therefore that's why you should respect people because it's innate. It's not because everybody deserves respect and it's actually none of your fucking business and people can decide to fuck whoever they want or not for whatever reason and it right. doesn't actually involve you and you should just still have civil rights regardless. But like the truth of the matter is there probably are lots of physiological things that influence someone's sexual orientation. Like there are genetic markers. We have some data that like if you are a later born son and your mom has had several sons before, your odds of being gay are higher. Like there's just random yeah. stuff like that. There's like inner ear anatomy differences between straight and gay women. There's small stuff like that. But like even if you just actively decided, you just chose like this is how I want to live my life,
I'm in my gay era.
Anyone. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like that's the thing is like we can prove it all day long, but like, you know, if the idea was if we prove that it's genetic in basis and like it's not a choice, then they'll have to give us rights. But they that's not how it works.
Right. Super true. Yeah. And I mean, right. That's the thing. And that's where the issues that pop up for me with this are is like, yeah, how are you going to use this to undermine the rights of a person? And, you know, until the tech bros don't have the stereotype of destroying society so they can make $8 a month.
That's very specific.
I'll just think that. And it's on them to fix that. It's on them to fix that gross mischaracterization that I am asserting right now. Yeah.
Well, on that note, having just talked about what happens when you have multiple sons, I am going to take us to our next piece of fucking news. And that, you like that segue? Yeah.
Okay. Nice.
So I'm going to take us to our next piece of fucking news, which is research on the well-being of mothers when they have multiple kids of the same gender. Mm-hmm. And the research has concluded that when, if parents have two kids of the same sex, you may decide they want to have a third child, and that child also comes out, wait for it specifically, a third girl, their well-being dips down. It's not true if it's two boys and then it's a third boy. And if people have a son and a daughter, they're less likely to want to have a third child, and they have that third child a little bit later is another finding of it, is that people seem to have a difficult time, specifically mothers have a difficult time with having two daughters and not a son, and then have an even worse time with three daughters. Mm-hmm. And this sort of speaks to probably underlying preference for boys, and probably also because it's notable that fathers don't have this same dip in well-being. And in fact, fathers seem to really like having two little girls. Mm-hmm. That it seems like it probably has something to do with the way that mothers are more involved in parenting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it definitely hit me with the, yeah, like it seems to affect mothers more than fathers. So it's like, oh, I wonder why that is. Maybe because somebody's cooking and the other one isn't. Yeah. But it's quite an assertion. I always thought that, like, oh, you know, and I know people personally who I've never had this conversation with them. But as I see them have more and more children, I'm like, oh, you're chasing a gender. And that is, as a person who will never want to have children, as a person who will never have them, I think that all of that baby making stuff is weird, except when you use it in your sex talk. But like, yeah, to seeing people like chase for this thing, like, I don't think anybody says, oh, I want three kids, but they'll be like, we got two girls. We're trying for a boy this time. It's like, oh, yikes. Yeah, I don't know what, like, can't you just make the two that you have good people? Mm-hmm.
That's interesting because, you know, I just got married March 25th of this year.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And we don't have any children yet, but we have been discussing, you know, even prior to, you know, when we were engaged before, about family planning. And there have been a lot of times where we've talked about, like, having a girl and even knowing what her name is in ways that we haven't really discussed, like, a boy. And so, you know, but I think growing up in a household where I have a brother and an older sister, I'm always thinking, and I have also a nephew and I have a niece. I think I think about it in terms of, like, my own relationships with, like, within my own family. And, but yeah, I never thought about it as far as a preference, because ultimately I would prefer for whoever comes into this world to be healthy and to be a positive contribution to society. But I can admit that, like, in my mind, I've romanticized the idea of, like, our first child being a girl, and I never thought about it as being, like, an odd thing to think about.
Yeah, I mean, you know, people have kids for all kinds of reasons. I should say that, and, you know, it's important that there are people here, I guess. Hot take, right? Yeah, somebody's got to fix the climate. No one currently alive will. So, so it's up to the next ones. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, you know, it's quite an insight that having more children can hurt you in time. That's what I took from it, and then I high-fived myself.
Well, I mean, so this is an area where I have had a particular level of interest as a person who doesn't want to have kids, and I've known that for a really long time. I have always found it really interesting to talk to people who do want to have kids and just ask them what it is that they want from that and what they hope for. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's really interesting, and some of the folks have really well thought out answers, and it's something they've really wanted, and they have. It's part of, like, their larger life goals, and they can explain in great detail what it is they hope for. And then other people haven't really thought about it, or they think things like someone who will love me unconditionally, or someone, you know, like, they have these expectations put on this human that they can't actually guarantee.
I want a little mini me running around. Yeah.
Or they haven't actually thought it through, and it's just something that they've been pressured to do. And it'll be like, now my parents will get off my back, or, like, whatever.
Yeah.
So there's just, like, a lot of reasons. And because there's so many reasons, I don't think we can make any sort of clear lines drawn from parenthood to, like, wellness. But there are a lot of studies that, like, when you have a child, a lot of your measures of wellness go down, and for a while, like, because you lose sleep, it's stressful, you know, it costs a lot of money. And we don't talk honestly about all of those parts. And so I think because people have such a harder time than they expected to, that makes it even harder. And it's very isolating in this particular time, because we aren't really raising kids communally like most of human history was. And it just makes it that much harder to do. And there's just so many ways in which people's wellness and their like measures of happiness and those kind of things just go down. And that doesn't mean that it's not worth it to them. But like, I was not surprised to hear that mothers' well-being goes down because it seems like with every child that just kind of would be the case. It's a lot of work.
But it would seem like that would be the case regardless of like sex or gender. That's why I thought it was interesting, because I would just think, I remember on The Simpsons, every time Homer and Marge had a child, his hair would come out.
Yeah, that's right.
Until eventually he just had those three strands. And I've always thought of it, it was just the stress of bringing people into the world that you had to keep alive, right? Like, and even seeing my parents stress over me and my siblings' well-being, it's like, ooh, like, do I want to take on that stress, like, intentionally? Like, that's a lot of cortisol, you know? But yeah, the fact that the studies suggested it, if it's a girl or boy or whatever, changes the stress level, that's interesting.
I think it also would have to do with our expectations of what is required of parenting girls versus boys, because we have like sort of gendered expectations of what to do with kids. Like there's a lot of data that like when a child is, you know, and also we're just going to say like assigned male at birth, right? We don't actually, you know how that kid's going to identify later. But when a kid is assigned male at birth, people, you know, start treating them differently from the beginning. Like they hold baby boys shorter, they do less to you know, like be like let it out, you know, your emotions are okay, you can express them, they touch them less often, just stuff like that, where it could also be that you just think boys are going to be easier because you don't have to worry about their feelings.
Right, yeah, which is what a nightmare, right?
I mean, I you know, I think I told you this. I used to be a full-time consultant for a nonprofit in DC called Mixer, stands for Men Can Stop Rape. And for nearly 20 years, the organization has specifically like worked with boys and teenagers and young men about healthy relationships. And the whole idea was about like ways that you can be strong without being violent, and how you can be in the forefront of eradicating rape culture by actually engaging in the conversation. And we would often talk about how like the dominant story of masculinity or femininity is like very restrictive. And the only way to kind of get out of that matrix is to be able to recognize that it's there in order to be your true authentic self. And that's, I think, conversations that aren't happening as much. The fact that there is an indoctrination that happens very early on for boys and girls, people in general, right, that ends up resulting in these expectations put upon them, that is not always fair, you know, oftentimes it's not.
And and in that way, just like the last article and this article, it's like it's good that we're pushing these conversations, and in another article that we're going to get to, but like pushing these conversations just to kind of expose the fallacy of gender in and of itself, right? Like you're just a human being. You have, the only things that are different are like your gonads, like, and then the hormones that are produced thereof, right? But other than that, you're a regular human, you're a human being with capacity for strength and great good and great evil and emotional, being overwhelmed emotionally, inflicting your emotions on other people, like that kind of stuff. So like the more you talk about it, the more you can have a grasp of it and then be like, a lot of these things are choices that you're making. And you know, I laugh a lot about when I was a kid, in my family, if anybody started crying, they would say, "You need breast milk." And then everybody would start laughing. And so for years, I just could not cry. Like it didn't matter what was happening to me. I just remembered that ridicule as a child. Right. And so, you know, I bring that up to my little cousins now and my old cousins now, and we laugh at it, but I like laughing at it because it reminds us all that that was bad, right? Like that was a very bad thing that happened, that people who loved us did, and they did it out of wanting to protect us from a world that's going to overwhelm us. No. But that is not, that's one way to think about it. And that is not the way to think about it, because we understand that we are emotionally stunted adults as such, you know? So yeah, it again,
yeah, a lot of people only know what they know until they know otherwise, right? You know, and right. That's why enlightenment and knowledge and meeting people and exploring the world is important.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, on that note, let's explore a really weird part of the world. That's a judgment. I don't know. Just a strange, unusual part of the world, a rare and exceptional part of the world. And that will take us to our final piece of fucking news, which has to do with the question of, can you get pregnant if you're already pregnant? So this just was a random article that, I mean, probably my mom sent me, because again, shout out to my mom for sending me the weirdest articles. But this has to do with superfetation, which is the incredibly rare instance of already being pregnant and getting pregnant again on top of it. And just to back up to what this is like, we're going back to like how menstrual cycle works. Pregnancy generally happens because an ovum is released and a sperm joins it in the fallopian tube, and they implant in the uterine lining. And generally speaking, the way you can have more than one fetus at a time is either because it divides and that becomes identical twins, or because you happen to release two ova during the same cycle, which is possible because you've just got a bunch of ovas and the follicles happen to develop at the same time. And that's how you get fraternal twins. And that's how twins work. But superfetation happens, it's most commonly when someone's going through fertility treatments. And so they have a fertilized egg that's been implanted, you know, probably through medical intervention, and then they release an ova and also have unprotected sex and then get pregnant. I'm going to do air quotes, naturally at the same time. And these pregnancies can be weeks apart, it seems to be. It doesn't seem like it's usually any greater distances than like 4 weeks. So it's often like 2 to 4 weeks. And it might not be detected until really late because you go in for your ultrasound early on and the first one's not visible. And then you go in for like, you know, your 20 week or whatever. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, buddy, you got another friend in there. But it's an incredibly rare thing. But yes, it is physically possible.
It also goes to the fact that like a lot of female genital health is not understood until one is trying to be pregnant, because because it's all internal and we don't like to hook up machines to people and blast them with rays, that like a lot of times women don't find out that there's anything going on out of the ordinary until they want to be pregnant, and so these sorts of things are going to be detected. But it has to do with, more times than not, it's because of things like IVF and added hormones. It's the same reason why you end up with people with like the octomom and stuff like that. It was like
that was an IVF thing,
yeah, it was an IVF thing where they put in 3 or 4 implanted ovaries, not ovaries, eggs, implanted eggs into the body. Maybe that's new science. That's good science fiction right there. We put another ovary in. The try baby. But yeah, you know, it's usually because of that and the hormones that make the ovaries release more eggs than typically and stuff like that lead to these kinds of things. So just another nightmare scenario.
I'm happy it's rare, because I mean, because pregnancy is precarious enough, you know, it's a lot of challenges associated with it for a lot of people. And then even if you want to think about it from a racial lens, like not every person who needs help when it comes to their health care gets the same treatment too. You know? So that creates another challenge, you know, right? Like, so it's one thing to not be able to, you know, Daryl, you were making a point about like some folks not being able to know much about their body until they actually go into the hospital to learn about like the pregnancy. But then there might be people who go into the hospital and they're just not getting the right answers because of who they are.
Also, so true. It's important that you know, you take control of your own body when it comes to medicine. Like, you know, it's not like you know your body better than a doctor does, but you do, and you should be your biggest advocate for yourself. And you know, get an ultrasound before you even want to have a child, just so you want to get a good picture of what your stuff looks like, right? Because I mean, especially with African-American women, cysts, fibroids, right, affect them at a way higher rate. And I know plenty of women who have been carrying around fibroids for forever, and then they go to the doctor because something's wrong. It's like, oh, you are essentially 5 months pregnant with fibroids, and so you got to get those things removed, right? So like, it's important that you advocate for yourself, and it's important you be aware of the things that are happening in your body. And even if that requires being a bit stubborn to a doctor or seeing a variety of doctors,
you get like, second, third, fourth opinion.
Then also we got to talk about it being 2023, and like if you live in the Rust Belt, you may not have a gynecologist within an hour or two.
That also is
you may not have the ability to go get this care unless you take a day off of work and you drive several hours to a different damn state. And that is thank you to the Supreme Court of the United States.
Right. And that's when you say like, you think that it's the left coming for you. It's the right that is leaving you to die. I want to keep my guns or whatever.
No, it's crazy, right? We talk about like life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness. And for a long time, like the right wing was very much about those type of things. And but to me, it feels like it's becoming more and more fascist. And I think the Supreme Court is reflective of that. Like, And the conversations become so binary and it loses all the nuance. You know, these are supposed to be smart people and these aren't. I mean, these are people looking about things in a very binary way. And so with Roe v. Wade, and you think about like how that was, you know, basically taken away for so many people, it resulted in people not understanding that there's a lot of healthcare related to it. It's not even connected to like the hot topic issue that ends up becoming so polarizing. It's so many other things related to it that ends up getting kind of thrown out, you know, in a way that's kind of helpful.
And it's because people, I think it's because, I guess the world tries to make you too busy, but it's like, where's the nuance on the right? Like I get, you know, to me, it becomes a lot about punishing people for wanting to have sex when it's like, you know, well, if you have sex, you should be prepared for the consequences. It's like, yeah, but you should also be able to go to a doctor and like get your hoo-ha checked out. Like, or you should actually know the proper term for your hoo-ha. Yeah. Like, and you should know that before you learn multiplication. Like, you should be able to use the proper terms for things. Right. You know, and by legislating away a Planned Parenthood because they're known for giving abortions. Like people don't realize how much you are, you know.
That's going to be a lot of pap smears that don't happen.
Yeah, right.
It's going to be a lot of like people just need their medications. Like for me, like my primary care person, like physically can do things like pap smear, stuff like that. But she's like, insurance won't let me be reimbursed for it. So we don't do it. So I have to go find a different place. And for me, like Planned Parenthood, I'm just going in there and I have to walk past those weird fucking creeps just because I need like basic preventative healthcare. And they're like talking to me weird. I'm like, okay, I don't know if your fetish is for getting yelled at or for thinking about what whores we all are, but I don't want to engage in it just in case it gets you off. So,
it's pretty ironic, right? Because it's literally throwing the baby out with the bathwater in a way that's just not helpful. Like literally there's so many other reasons why a person would want to make sure that they have the type of healthcare access that they need. And it's not just because, you know, a lot of times people say it's because someone made a stupid mistake or something like that. It's like, no, it's way deeper than that. It's way more
Layered. There's way more things that can happen. And also, what if you did make a stupid mistake? We live in a country that has decided that punishment is the optimum way to deal with everything. We just go on punitive measures. We have to make it harder on people, whatchamacallit, Baltimore just, they're going to enact a thing where they call themselves being gentle, but they're just going to start issuing citations for crimes instead of arresting people. So you'll just be fined for things like public drunkenness and stuff like that. But it's like, I read an article that was just saying like, you know, when you talk about these things, you do have to recognize that we live in a society that's going to affect the poor more than anything. Mm-hmm. And so now, instead of just a firm talking to, instead of going away from just harassing these people, now we're going to add a day in court and a bill to people who are already under the weight of too many bills, right? So, it's just like, you know, Yeah, we love to punish people. We love to be able to point at someone and say, like, you did wrong. And so, yeah, and I guess maybe it's prosperity gospel. That's like the other side of it, where it's like, good things are happening for me because I'm God's chosen kid, and bad things are happening to you because you have a moral failing. And an ugh.
Yuck. And it's really, at the end of the day, another way to control people, right? Yeah. Like, it's just people with power who want to be able to control people who don't have as much power. And yet, people could have more power if they all were to unite. But we live in such a divisive world, country in particular, that makes it hard for us to come to an agreement with some of the most basic things, even like truth. I mean, like, truth is being now, history has been, we have a lot of examples of truth being used or untruth being used against the people. But I feel like things are getting really bad, like, where people are questioning reality. And I think when you go back full circle with AI, I think that the technology is going to make it even harder to discern reality and truth because of the technology.
Very that. Well, while we are talking about things that suck, we're going to pivot to our next regular segment, which is fucking idiots, fucking brilliant. And this is the segments where we talk about things that are terrible and then good.
Yeah. Try to end it on a positive note, but
Oh boy. Yeah. 2023. For our stupidest story, our fucking idiot of the day, this is just, oh man. So trans sports bans have been happening in a bunch of different sports. Sometimes it's just so that they can bully like one sixth grader in Kentucky out of getting to do basketball. So sometimes they're just so targeted. But there's a lot of bans, and it's specifically for trans girls and trans women, because apparently we don't care about trans men in sports. But the people who do not watch any women's sports and do not support them and couldn't give two shits about Title IX are very, very concerned about women's sports, have now done a next level stupid because they are banning trans women from chess.
Shout out to the International Chess Federation.
Yes, which is a part of the Olympic Committee. So here's a couple things about this. This are like incredibly extra dumb. Like, this also will mean that trans men who had won women's titles before transitioning will also just see their titles abolished. So it's just basically they didn't consult with anybody who's trans. They probably didn't consult with a whole lot of women. And yeah, they're temporarily banning trans women from competing in its events, which basically comes down to, all right, so if your argument for keeping trans women out of like weightlifting or running is that they have some sort of advantage from their first puberty, what exactly is the advantage in chess other than you think women brain be small, like,
right,
with their little silly lady brains? So now it'll be unfair. They're just giving away the whole thing that they've been saying. You know, they're saying the quiet part out loud, which is that not only are, you know, the genders immutably different, but women are inherently inferior, right? Like, even my tiny little silly lady brain, not just my muscles. So
yeah, it's the thing. Like, I will say, my immediate reaction to this was pure joy. I was inconsolable in laughing at this article because, yeah, there's no way to slice it. Like, you know, the one thing I will say that's great about this gender debate, I hope, is that people are starting to recognize that gender is a social construct, and they're starting to have to analyze that and understand that, like, yeah, we put a lot of nonsense out there. Like, the idea that, like, I couldn't wear a pink glove in the 80s because they weren't even for sale for me is ridiculous, right? And something that we put on it. And so, yeah, the idea that, like, why would you have to separate boys and girls in a game, in a tabletop game? Like, it's not arm wrestling. We're not even playing, like, papal football. You're talking about chess. It's picking up and putting down small rocks.
Yeah. And I love, they said they wanted to analyze the impact of these policies and did not want to rush this process. It's like, come on, you can't, let's use your mind. You know, like, just use your brain.
We're doing a 2-year study, but we want to start off by saying trans people don't exist in chess. So give us some time.
Yeah, in the interim, we'll just say that. Yeah.
Right. And that's the thing when and then people will say like, oh, they're being hyperbolic when they say that they just want to erase trans people from existence. Mm-hmm. And you say, oh, no, that's you're being hyperbolic. We're just trying to save the children. And that's absolute nonsense, because if I've played chess, I've lost in chess a lot. I love every one of my wins. I'd love to beat women, men, boys, and girls in chess. It feels good when you beat somebody in chess. Mm-hmm. Please don't limit me. Let me trounce a child in chess. It's gonna make my day better.
Yeah.
It's just very silly. And like, one of the things that I love is I know one of the women that they quote in this.
No.
She used to take, dance classes for me, and she's like a world renowned chess champion, and she's like the author of books about it. She's a grandmaster, and her name's Jennifer Shahad, and she has won the women's championships twice, and she specifically said that it's ridiculous and dangerous, and she suggested that they reverse course and start from scratch with better consultants. And I was like,
I really, these sorts of things, it does not strike me as like, oh, we had a meeting. Nah, one person wrote a very fiery email at 11 p.m. on a Saturday. Mm. And instead of being like, what's going on in your life that this is what you were focused on a Saturday, they just said, yeah, that sounds good. We'll ban them.
I can't even fathom what the argument was and how stupid that conversation was. And like,
I just thought it was ridiculous out of the gate. It was one of those situations where it was hard to even take the article seriously. Almost wonder if it's like, you know, with those onion, what was that onion article?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I feel like those are becoming more and more common. It's like,
oh yeah,
in like mainstream media, you know? And I was like, wait a minute, this is a BBC article? Like,
right.
It's crazy. But we got to take it seriously, though, because like that type of idiocracy, you know, like idiot type thinking persists. And like those folks are like mobilizing and building power and momentum.
Yeah. And that's the thing. It's like, you know, and I enjoy having these conversations with people in person, because I think you can get through to one person faster than you can get through to a group of people. So whenever I am at places and somebody brings this stuff up, I like to bring up things like this. I just did it this weekend because a friend of mine was talking nonsense about trans folks, and I was walking them down the logical path to being like, you are on the wrong side of history, and also this really isn't as big a deal as you think it is. And then I brought this up, and even they went, what, Jess? I was like, yeah, all of it is dumb. And and these people, you might say that, oh, they have a good idea with one thing, but recognize that this is all that this is what they're trying to get to. And so when someone says like your Yasha Iglesias is the trans professional chess player that they interviewed in this article, said that this appalling situation will lead to depression and suicide attempts. It's like, you know, on the whole, right? Like that's the issue. It's like, as you just try to push these people out of being able to enjoy sunny days, the end result is dehumanization. And then after that, it becomes eradication, right? Like that's the issue.
It's a continuum of harm, you know?
Yeah.
No matter how subtle it is, it creates degradation. And that's how you make a person no longer feel like a person, but make a person feel like they are less than. And you know, we've seen it again in history. It happens all the time. We got to prevent it from happening. But like, that's how you start to degrade people. That's how you dehumanize them. And when you dehumanize, that's when you start moving away from empathy, moving away from people being viewed as being human beings like everyone else who deserves dignity, respect, and love.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. On that note, let us head to our final segment. And that is our fucking brilliant. this one is, of course, because it's 2023, still caked in a little bit of, there's always a caveat, there's always an asterisk by our brilliant, because it's usually just like somebody slid in and did a good defense. shout out to the voters of Ohio. because Republicans are trying to not only take away personal liberties, but also just like your freedom to vote and have direct democracy.
Yep.
So knowing that the voters of a lot of states are enshrining abortion rights and reproductive rights into the state constitutions in response to Roe v. Wade being overturned, the Republicans of Ohio managed to slide basically a change in procedure on how you'd be able to make amendments to the Constitution. And what it has been up to this point is 50% plus one, and they were trying to make it 60%, which would make it harder for voters to enshrine abortion laws. And they were very clear that this is why they were doing. They specifically said that they were doing it to counter abortion laws being written in by voters, because people overwhelmingly, actual citizens overwhelmingly prefer that abortion be legal. It is just this weird, like, subsection of the population that has a weird amount of power who are opposed to it.
Minority rule is what the Republican Party has had to deal with because they haven't won a popular election nationally for a very, very long time.
Yeah.
People who can drink have never been alive when the Republicans won a national election.
Yeah. But the voters turned out on a totally weird, random midterm like section, right? It is currently the summer. Right. It is 2023. It is an odd numbered year. And they turned out because they were like, no. We are still going to engage in direct democracy. And so they shot down this attempt to make it go up to 60% for constitutional amendments. And it was, you know, it's like, it's very much a procedural thing, but it is at its core 100% about abortion rights. And both sides are very explicit that that's the case.
Yeah. And it's more important than abortion rights because, like, yeah, like I said, this idea of minority rule, people trying to be like, we will not have the public behind us, so we need to make sure that we can still do whatever we want, is intensely un-American. And I don't even like using words like un-American. Shout out to Ohio. Shout out to all of the close watch that the proposal got, because it was very well publicized that that's what was happening. And so it was hard for somebody to be like, no, this isn't important, or, you know, just stay home. So
we all think this is indicative of, for like the upcoming like general election.
You know, I think that hopefully it means that more people will vote. I think hopefully more people will use that. I hope more people go to fucking jury duty, but like, I think that, like, the past 2 years, the rejection of Roe v. Wade, the hell was the other thing? Just, Clarence Thomas's entire flaming debacle. Act. Yeah. The Civil Rights
voting
Act.
Voting rights. Yeah.
Yeah. Voting rights. Like all those things. I hope. People recognize that, like, yeah, when it's time for you to vote, when it's time for you to actually have your say in government, it really does mean a lot. And while I don't think it's beneficial to be like, you should have to vote so often that they can't try to screw you over, right? Like overwhelm the ballot box so they can't try to screw you over. No, we need to throw out the people who would try to screw us over. Like that's what you need to do. But like, the main reason Trump was elected was because not a lot of people went to vote. I've been saying that since he was elected. Like, the voter turnout was trash in the 2020 election. And so, something like this, even though, you know, I wish it was like they failed by a margin of, 79 to zip or whatever. And it was way closer than that. But, you know, I do think that, like, people, especially young people, but I mean, because, like, even Obama was elected because he got young people to vote for the first time. Right. So, like, I mean, yeah. So I
and essentially hope. Trump did the same thing. He was getting, he got a lot of people who were voted for the first time. They call him like the flyover, country. Eric, you know, he didn't take them for granted. And unfortunately, I think Hillary did take for granted certain states and districts and counties that she probably should have visited. Cause I mean, the margins were real slim, you know?
Yep. So, I do hope like stuff like this just reinforces my worldview that voting is important.
I agree.
It's nice to hear about something good coming out of Ohio.
You know?
Good for y'all. So on that note, we were running low on time. So Chad, thank you so much for joining. Where can people find out more about you? And you mentioned where some of your shows are, but where can they like follow you and
yeah, thank you so much. I had a great time, y'all. Follow me on Instagram at I am Chad Eric Smith. I think there, and then Facebook, Chad Eric Smith, probably the two social media platforms I use the most. I have a film production company. It's called Mr. Duke Productions. So MISTERDUKE productions.com. And also, you know, check out muralarts.org to learn about like a local, you know, nonprofit that's doing a lot of great work and really combining public art and trying to use creativity to solve some of society's most intractable issues.
Awesome. Yeah. Thank you so much. Dara, where can people find out more about you and where can they buy your album, Black Gentrifier?
Oh, you can do all of that at darrylcomedy.com, D-A-R-R-Y-L comedy.com. If you can't spell comedy, my comedy is not for you. And that's okay. You still deserve unalienable rights and you should vote. but yeah, you can go do that. I'll be all over the place. You know, I live on I-95. So, yeah, do that. Come to the shows, buy the album. It's for sale and for stream. If you see me in the street, I have CDs on me. If you still have a CD player. Nice. So, yeah, for the throwbacks, for the ironics, right? I ironically bought a CD from a guy for $10. Would be a fun thing to bring up at a party. In fact, I got three of them. Would be even funnier, right? That's hilarious. I'm laughing right now. So yeah, do that. And also, Dr. Timmery, where can the people find you?
You can find me at drtimmery.com. That is drtimmery.com. So Dr. Timmery, that's where I post on the blog articles, including the ones we've discussed here and other sexuality that's in the news. And you can also find out more about events like DTF, the live show coming back. We will be returning at our new home of Comedy Sports.
Yes.
So in Center City, Philadelphia, we are going to be monthly starting September 22nd, I think, is our first one. Yeah. So you can get
Friday nights.
Yes, we're going to be, it's like basically mostly like third Friday of the month or something of that nature. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you can get tickets on Comedy Sports and it is a nice BYO venue.
Yes.
So you can.
We're going back to our roots.
Yes. Yes.
Yes. The first few years of DCF was BYO and man was a time ad. I still think about when Timmery spat wine on the floor after I gave her a taste like a sommelier and then she spat it on the ground and. It's so we're gonna have good times is what I'm saying. Come to CSC Philly, the home of Comedy Sports, in the Adrian Theater, right there, right in the front. We're gonna have a blast. Nice little black box and bring and your
it's
own
it's also ADA compliant
and it very which much is ADA compliant, which yes. is we have not had for a while.
Yes. It is a nice upgrade from a lot of venues in Philly that are not accessible for folks who use wheelchairs and other things like that. So
yeah. So yeah, nice ADA compliant space. Come through, bring your friends, bring your booze, and let's have some fun and curse in a room with no windows.
Yeah, yeah, awesome. Well, Chad, thanks again for joining us today. You are a joy.
Thank you. I had a good time. Now we got to keep reading more articles. So now we're down the rabbit hole.
And thank you to our editor and producer, Flirt Vonnegut. Mm-hmm. And thank you all so much for listening. And we're going to be doing the podcast still, but possibly less often because we have the live shows now. So just stay subscribed. Get subscribed if you're not already. We are on all of the platforms. But thank you so much for supporting the show for 10 flim flamin' years. We appreciate you so much, everybody.
Yep. Bye-bye. And you ain't hanging with the team if you ain't down to fuck.